Good morning. Today is Wednesday, January the 18th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Supervisor, Mr. Mike Wilson. Good morning, sir.
Oh, boy. Is it morning?
Morning or good?
It's all good. We live in paradise.
Yeah. That tropical paradise, it gets a little bit of rain.
Yeah. I wonder if paradise isn't perfect.
Have we gotten more than normal? We must have. I mean, it's been so long since we've been normal that we were getting inundated and not really there.
I think we're probably around, you know, we're definitely above seasonal, but what they're saying and what folks are saying is like, well, just wait, because you get a big slug of rain here, and then if it doesn't come back
dry,
then all the, you know, a lot of the advances you may have gotten have not been a thing. There's a lot of discussion about it feels like we're getting a lot of rain, and sure, some reservoirs may be fuller than others, but there's still many of the bigger reservoirs around the state are not at capacity. And
I think the snowpack is what everybody's been pleased about.
The snowpack's all right, but really,
as long as it's still there.
But we've had, you know, a century of depleting aquifers in the valley and other places where those aren't anywhere near coming back with these storms necessarily. So, you know, there's some positive parts about this, and then there's some parts we still got to keep an eye on for sure.
I think they ought to drill a bunch of holes in the cement down in L.A. so it gets into the dirt.
There you go. You need some dirt.
Well, okay, make sure there's dirt under there instead of more cement. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
I am ready. I never get it right, but you never know.
You know, that's been the lead-in for three people so far this month, and they've all nailed it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so.
We'll see. But don't raise people's expectations.
I won't.
Especially mine.
String along. Why do we say that someone gets strung along?
String along. It just seems like maybe like people used to tie strings to small animals and drag them on, like bugs and stuff.
Well, you kind of got halfway close there. Almost.
I think of like flea surf.
Yeah. You've been watching Bugs
like
Life, huh?
Yeah, something like that.
Almost from the time men first put halters and bridles on animals, strings of them were formed some operations. Caravan drivers tied as many as 50 camels together in a single file, then handled them with only two or three men. Long strings of donkeys were linked in pack trains, and smaller groups of horses were driven in the same fashion. A person who is strung along is being led, sometimes by an increasingly long string, and sometimes with increasingly distant goals. That's like about three quarters right.
They weren't just led by men. Just want to point that out.
I see you went to the training class.
No, just being clear.
Oh, gee. Clear. Interesting, interesting word. Do we know yet how the county has reacted, has responded with all the, I guess the last month? It's been almost a full month with all of the various things that have been going on.
Yeah. At our board meeting this week, which was just a special meeting, we did approve or basically certified, I guess you'd say, the emergency declaration that the sheriff made with relationship to this is the storms, not the earthquakes. I think we have an estimated, just in roads alone, $3 million add up so far. And
is that like trees falling onto the roadways?
No, I think it's actually like erosion and culverts and those kinds of damages. I wouldn't exclude trees necessarily, but there's a lot of staff time in there. There's just a lot of movement of dirt and, you know, the stuff that you have to do to fix these things.
Normal stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and basically this is piggybacking on both the state and federal declarations, and which they allow us to do, and then there's reimbursements that are allowed. So this is a bit of an administrative formality, but nonetheless, it's important that we avail of those resources to help fix these things. And
so there is the opportunity for the county to piggyback on top and get reimbursement, because I know that was one of the concerns with the earthquakes, is even though there was declaration, we weren't anywhere close to FEMA numbers, thankfully, to be able to get anything. It was just kind of tracking?
Well, it depends, and we're always tracking those things, and they could aggregate or add up to those thresholds. And so we're asking people to, if you have damages if of some significance, to go on either for the earthquake or for the floods or for the storms, I guess, go on to the sheriff's website and register those because even that's not necessarily making a claim, but it is helping to gather that data, and if possible, we can get up to the threshold where we can avail of some of those funds. And there's different thresholds for the public sector with relationship to infrastructure and those things, and then there's a different threshold for the private sector for individual businesses and homeowners. And even then, you know, it's good if you've had some damages to still report that. Again, it's on the sheriff's website, or you can call the number 441-5000, and someone will help you out. And I'm going to repeat that number, 441-5000.
We ran it for a week. Yeah, it's kind of like a tattoo in the head now.
It's a great. Well, it's just full. You know, it has helpful folks there that can help with this. I mean, it's still even COVID related.
That's so. Only 8 to 5, right?
Yeah, during business hours.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's not an emergency phone line. It's basically an informational line that helps direct people, and they'll help walk you through the website to allow for that, you know, so that administrative process. But we are, as with every one of these emergencies or storms or earthquakes, all these events that occur, we're always iterating, coming back around and seeing, like, where can we do better? How can we make these systems work, you know, and
gap management.
Yeah. And how can, where are the most robust spaces that we have, and where are the weaknesses? And a lot of that is just really in how we communicate.
It's funny. It doesn't matter what department, mm-hmm. what political perspective, what experience level.
Yeah.
Everybody has said the same word.
Yeah.
Communication.
Yeah.
That was it. And I was giggling. We had, during a couple of the coverages, 5 or 6 folks all texting.
Right.
And I said, well, how are you doing getting it out? Mm-hmm. Oh, Facebook.
Right.
Internet's down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're doing. Internet's down.
Right.
It's like, yeah. But communication across the board.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, for those folks that did sustain some damage,
mm-hmm.
is there a magic number that they should report? I mean, is $1,000 enough? Is $300 not enough?
You know, I don't have a great answer for that.
To make it worthwhile for everybody.
I think mostly it's around damage, you know, structural or substantial.
Computer falls off. Okay, $1,000 to replace it. Worthwhile or not?
I'm going to say report it.
Okay.
In general, if you feel it's substantial in some way, I would say report it. It's not just turn that off there.
Somebody's reporting something.
Ding, ding, ding. It's not just about whether you can get something back from that, but it's also
The county to
right. It's geographically located. It's data about earthquakes. It's data about storms. It's how we manage these things in the future is how we do things from the past. So management without data isn't really management.
No, it's called intuition.
Right. Yeah. So it's helpful. I want to I also want to kind of reach into the parts where the community really had some really great performance with relationship to its response in resilience associated with some of the energy systems that we have, some of the backup systems that we've had, and some of the in some of the communities we've seen, both in Rio Del and Trinidad and other places, backup battery systems that had the municipal spaces had that were that helped people come in and charge their phones and do and have some heating and those sorts of things. And then even as we've talked about before, the microgrid system up at the airport performed really well. And so after the earthquake, you know, when the power went out everywhere, the airport was self-sustaining.
Up and running.
And not just the airport, but the Coast Guard station itself. And so it was kind of, you know, a really important beta test. It happened at a time when there was a lot of cloud cover. So, you know, that system is recharged by solar.
Well,
so
it was nighttime, too.
And it was nighttime as well. And so and so it really challenged the systems in different ways and allowed people to really look at that. And so we had that system. There's the Blue Lake system for the gas station there, which then keeps that gas station open. And you
did you see the runs on gas?
Right. There's always a run on gas.
Which I thought was interesting to me, the number of people who have the small little generator. I forget what the model is, but it's the same manufacturer, same model. Everybody was saying this is a great little – and they were running to get – gas or I guess diesel, I don't know which.
Yeah.
For their little generators. It wasn't for their vehicles.
Right.
It was, and that's where the panic kind of set in rather than what's happened in the past where, you know, there were only a couple gas pumps that were working.
Well, and so we talk about resilience at the institutional level, like I was just talking about, and then we can really work on the systems at the home level. And so there's a lot of people who have their home solar panel systems or they have backup battery systems. And there's even some of us who have, with our electric vehicles, inverters that can power our homes as well. And those are other ways that we can, as we start transitioning in these ways, that we can have that stability with these systems. Now, are our expectations that everything runs the exact same way as it does under normal circumstances?
Depends on who you talk to.
Right. I think we need to adapt our expectations with relationship to that to make sure that, you know, food's not going bad or that our toilets can flush and our medical services, you know, in terms of maybe have a nebulizer or something like that at home, the oxygen tanks, those sorts of things. We really got to focus on making sure that those systems are resilient.
Priorities.
And prioritizing.
I mean, that's all
that is. Yeah. And you know, we don't necessarily need to just run the whole house on a full generator at that time. I mean, people do what they want to do. I get that, but that's probably not the focus of where we need to be.
Well, I think it would be an interesting socioeconomic study for me to find out, one, how many people have moved into the area in the last 10 years?
Yeah.
Just as a percentage to get a sense. Because I think folks like you, folks like me, we've gone through this rodeo gazillion times. I mean, expect 3 days.
Yeah.
That's it, and that's the minimum. Anything better than that is a win. Don't get too fired up. Don't freak out. Don't do some of these things, but we continue to hear that there are people that either this is the first time or they have forgotten or their circumstances have changed significantly and they didn't anticipate. You know, I think the only thing that the vulnerability that I felt was if the water system.
Right.
Okay. You know, I mean, water, what is it? 2 gallons? No, 5 gallons a day per person?
Yeah, and I think
something like that, you know, didn't have that level.
Yeah, and you know, energy is one part of this, which I was talking about, but you're correct. It's like having water, having all those things, and there are ways to be ready for that. There's plenty of websites and associated things. I have the sheriff, when he comes in and interviews, he'll tell you all about all those systems, and I think those are valuable and great. And then it's also just not everybody has everything, and so reaching out to your neighbors and making sure that everybody
Are they okay?
Is everybody okay?
Do you need help?
Yeah.
And then
very, very, very important. And I find in our neighborhood, certainly during these times, we all connect and make sure everyone's good. If there's anyone needs anything and someone's got, oh, I'm low on candles or a flashlight.
Mayonnaise.
Or whatever it is.
Whatever well, it is, yeah.
Try not to get in the refrigerator too much.
Okay, sugar.
Right.
But yeah, it's, I think the thing that most triggered the feedback that we received and that I've heard, it was the wind and the aftershocks.
Yep.
Not the primary events, but the ongoing elements of it. We'll talk about what that is when we come back. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
I know.
Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, what are people talking to you about in association with this?
Well, I think one of the groups that is new that sort of have been part of this, and we have OES, you know, our emergency, you know, services.
The basement dwellers.
Yeah, it's like, but doing a lot of coordination. Yeah. There's the local OES, there's the state OES, and so there's that. There's a newer group that's kind of come into the space called COAD, and I think it's the Humboldt County Organizations Active in Disaster. And what that is an organization that actually organizes the organizations. So really there's so many different community organizations, whether it's veterans halls or whether it's
volunteer fire departments
yeah. or whether it's animal shelters or homeless. There's just so many aid organizations right. in this community. And so what this organization does is it, before the event, these events happen, and I've been to a few of their meetings in the last 6 months because this is what they've been doing, they reach out and they basically aggregate, pull all that information together so that they can, in a time of emergency, reach out specifically and have the numbers and be able to connect organizations. So when some organizations, oh, what we really need is something, 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 they can co-op be like, oh, we know of a place that has that. It's over here. And then they're able to connect those things. And so
is this
very
active in conjunction with like the Salvation Army and Red Cross and
everybody,
those visible ones that we see out there. These are like
right.
a lot of the support people that help those folks out.
Right.
Too.
So this is basically that at that level of and sort of the nonprofit, non-governmental organizations, like you're saying, it's a sort of a response coordinated, and I can, you know, in these last few weeks, this is their sort of beta testing, start stretching it out, trying it. There was definitely a lot of success in there. There was definitely some challenges again in communication, but that's what you have to do to make it work. And I think that it's going to be beneficial moving forward. So I'm looking forward to and as I said in the break to you, I think it's a good organization. You might want to get in here to interview and talk to them about it.
Yeah, there's certainly lots of layers
mm-hmm.
that you know your family unit.
Right.
You think about that, and maybe one step out, but you don't think about all of the others that
yeah.
may need or may not need. There was I think it was Supervisor Bushnell had talked about that there was some work being done in Rio Dell, and
yep.
then the space that was being used, the classroom or whatever, then got condemned.
Right.
It's like, uh-oh, now what? Now we're on plan C,
yeah.
and too often we only, you know, B is about as deep as we go.
Yeah, and Rio Dell is definitely a place that, you know, the county is devoting some resources into, because it's a community that has a lot of damage, and housing is in crisis already, and we have people who have become houseless as part of this, at least temporarily. And so getting people back into those spaces, and then even in the long run, you just can't take a community like that and put holes into it with housing that gets lost in that way, because it's hard to reinvest in spaces when the investment in that community happened when there was something else going on. And so it's really important for us to make sure that we get people back into homes as soon as possible, because ultimately, even financially, it's not good for us to have that pressure.
How difficult is it for the county to help a city? Because it's a whole different jurisdiction, a whole different funding.
Yeah.
It's just different.
It is different, and there are some challenges associated with that, because the way we can put resources into a space is different than a city can put resources into it. It's different than a nonprofit. And so you may want to be like, hey, I'll just give that house, you know, some money, or that household, some whatever it is. And as you can imagine,
or a shopping center. Remember, you know, when that blew up in Scotia?
Right.
Here's shopping center. It's not quite that easy, guys.
It's not that easy, but there are some good people working on it real hard. So yeah, that's how it is.
Well, and hopefully we'll have plenty of time to figure things out and bulletproof a little bit better, so that next time it's not quite as disruptive, or the response is a little bit quicker and a little bit more applicable to what the needs are.
And, you know, the board was appreciative of everybody's efforts, but we made a special shout out to the building inspectors that went around on kind of an emergency basis to really help people figure out whether their homes were safe or not. And that was...
Well, in the contractor community, I know there were a bunch of them that were down there.
Yeah.
Just, okay, what do you need done?
Right.
And I mean, that's part of what makes us,
yeah,
I think.
And, well, it speaks to building inspectors in general, because ultimately you don't want building inspector... We don't want to... things to fall down in these. So we need them doing their jobs. They're saving lives every day in the most quiet way, which is making sure that our buildings don't fall down in these situations. And so we have to appreciate, as much as people want to gripe about, regulations and building codes and all those other things, ultimately they're there to protect people in times like this.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, what is going on, or what's the status or the update, or has there been progress with the offshore, the wind turbine? I don't know really what the project is really called, but I know that last time we got together, there was leasing that was going to be happening. There's obviously the construction part and the concept on the North Spit, tying into the grid. Lots of questions that are still out there, but lots of commas and zeros being thrown around also, which is kind of intriguing for our little old neck of the woods.
Yeah, it's definitely, as I've said before, this community is really taking a look at this, and we know that there has, we've already had offshore leasing that's occurred through auction process through the feds. There's been a few companies that have won those auctions, and there's still some process that they're going through with relationship to that. It was in the, tens of millions of dollars and more. There is the process by which we're looking at community benefits agreements associated with that, meaning, it's not just monies that go directly to the federal coffers, but a chunk of it, almost a third of it, coming back into this community directly.
Now, is that for like the infrastructure and those types of things associated with the project so that the community can handle it and not be crippled? Or is there something else in that packaging?
Well, ultimately, it's not just about infrastructure, but it's also about wages. It's about, I mean, it's not just a physical infrastructure, it's also a social infrastructure associated with this. And yeah, is it impact related? Is it mitigation related? Sure. We'd love to get beyond that. I mean, from my perspective, 30% is too low. I think 100% would be great, because ultimately, if the federal government and is wanting to promote this technology and this space, then our ability to support it is very, very important with relationship to that. Our ability to respond to it and derive benefit from it is meaningful.
So these are the dollars that would otherwise be going to Washington?
Otherwise just going, exactly. So we're still working on that, right? And there will be other opportunities. And even that amount that was the number that was put forward by the feds, and this is still bigger than what the original proposal was. It's still on the trajectory of getting more. There's some federal legislation being proposed that would have a minimum 50% community benefits agreement number.
That could then apply to this?
Well, I don't know.
Or the timing.
I'm hopeful, but in the future, I mean, it's a trajectory that the federal government's figuring out now. It's part of what they call the just transition, because we're transitioning with relationship to energy systems around the United States. And as we know, more often than not, when we have these big technological shifts or infrastructure shifts, the people who benefit the least are the ones impacted the most, and the ones that are around in the communities where this happens. And so we, as these communities that are, you know, in those spaces, need to be active in that. And I think we are doing that for sure through the county, through an organization called CORE Hub, which is a part of Humboldt Area Foundation. The Fishermen's Associations are also part of that network. So there's, and then there's the labor unions, and everybody's trying real hard to make sure that as little of that money goes to the federal coffers as possible and is spent here improving this space and making us have the ability to respond and to be part of that.
Once this is in place,
mm-hmm.
there's still going to be the manufacturing
mm-hmm.
in that element. So this is a separate?
Yep, this is separate. So there's also now the Harbor District. Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District is negotiating with Crowley, which is a big international firm that does port type
work. They're the big boys.
Then they have, yeah. and women. And so I'm gonna keep on you about this. So the
okay, big boys and girls. How's that?
Yeah. There you go. They're the negotiations there. There are some agreements associated with that, and there will be more talks around that, hopefully. You know, I was a port commissioner here for 11 years. I toured a lot of ports, and one thing I saw consistently was communities that touted the economic benefits of their local ports, but the communities directly surrounding those areas were the most impacted and least resourced. And so we, as this community, needs to do our best to make sure that we're not, you know, that we're responding in that way.
So things like Fortuna's and Blue Lakes, as an example, because Eureka and Arcata, I would think, would be the ones that would get the benefit.
I'm even thinking even closer, Samoa, Manila, in places where we're going to have the impacts associated with actual construction.
That's interesting. And I would think that those would have been the communities that would benefit the greatest, because once it was up and running, during that time, where the restaurants, where the food places, you know, the gas stations, all those servicing things.
Typically, that's not where it happens. Like, in those communities, And my observation, especially in other places, and even you can see that it's like you're just getting the more rundown roads. You're getting the pollution, you're getting the noise and the lights. And so the impacts of those communities can be greater. So we have to do our best to mitigate for that and bring resources to those spaces.
Coordinate and communicate. Back to those C words again.
Yep.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's great. And
we'll
to
see
be
what
here.
The update is next time on this project.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks for coming by, Mike. See everybody tomorrow.